There are a lot of rumors out there, and it looks as if it's at the finish line. Now, this can fall through. These kind of things have in the past. But you could be looking at Russell Westbrook going to the Lakers for a large package. But ultimately, all that matters is you're going to have Westbrook, LeBron, Davis as your big three with the Lakers.
They didn't really give up anything that really matters.
They've been trying to dump Kuzma, it feels like, forever.
Forever.
Yeah, and Caldwell Pope is another guy that I think they were waiting to move on from. Montrezl Harrell wasn't really a fit. They picked him up from the Clippers. He came across the street, and it just didn't seem to fit. It didn't work. So you give up on guys that you've been waiting to give up on anyway, and a first-round pick, and you bring in Russ. Like, his price, he's got a huge ticket, but clearly the money is going to work here. And if you're Washington, I just saw a report. It sounds like Bradley Beal's going to be there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So I get loyalty. I respect it. But is there, like, nothing that will sell him on, like,
It's the same thing with Damian Lillard. It's the exact same thing.
But no, it's not. Because they've actually had, like, I guess you could say, like, years ago when they had John Wall, they had some success. But, like, at least Portland went to, I think they went to the conference final one year.
Yeah,
it's like everything keeps going. He's like, yeah, I'm good. I'll stay. No,
yeah,
no sweat.
You're right in terms of Washington being way worse and them really not helping him in any capacity. And now Russ is gone and they brought in some depth, clearly, but I don't think that's going to help him. That's going to put more pressure on him. And Damian Lillard said C.J. McCollum, and they went out and got Norman Powell and Jokic, and they've had different pieces, and they've been a contending team to an extent.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is, Damian Lillard has always been committed to Portland.
Yep.
Right? He was Giannis before Giannis was Giannis in Milwaukee. Now, Giannis got to the top of the mountain, so now that made sense for him. But Dame was always saying, I'm not one of those guys. I'm loyal to Portland. And now all of a sudden he's like, I don't know. Like, we'll see. I don't know if he's definitely going to go. I don't know if he definitely wants out. I'm not sure he's made up his mind on that. But loyalty goes a long way. And the payoff, I think, is more substantial. We just went through this chat with Milwaukee. It, in my opinion, in terms of legacy, and the NBA has become the legacy sport, right? They've almost monopolized the legacy chat. Everyone's compared to Jordan. Everyone's compared to a top five, top ten. Are you in the pyramid of all-time greats?
How many rings?
Exactly. Well, how many losses in the finals?
We don't say that in the NHL, do we?
Not really. Anywhere
not at
else.
All.
I mean, in the NFL, you do with Brady in particular. How many rings for Brady? Everyone knows how many he has. But
and for the quarterbacks, like, you need to get at least one before we're like, yeah.
You're
like, Rodgers at least has one.
Yes, he does. Yep, he does. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, again, it means more if you stay where you were.
Unless your team is not good. Like it.
No, of course. Like if you feel like it's an impossibility to get there, which in Washington they're not even close. Portland's not a championship team.
Nope.
But Giannis winning in Milwaukee and not leaving and spearheading some super team, it means more. You know, in the legacy chat, it means more.
Yeah.
Like, it's worth more points. It absolutely is. Speaking of the NFL, did you see that someone paid, let me find this, I think it was $4.3 million. $4.3 million, I want to say, for a Patrick Mahomes rookie card, which was like a one-of-one signed rookie card. But I believe it's the most expensive paid NFL card of all time. And that catches me off guard. Like, why? Like, I know Mahomes. I understand what he is right now. But how is that more valuable than, like, a Joe Montana card? Or a Lawrence Taylor card or Tom Brady card.
From what I understand, and I don't know very much, apparently like football cards are not really the thing.
No, I think you're
right
about
that. It's like baseball
that.
And basketball are kind of...
Yeah. Up here, like baseball has always owned that.
Yeah.
Like the Honus Wagner card, Babe Ruth cards, there's Ty Cobb cards. You know, the baseball has always owned it. Up here, hockey is... I remember as a kid always collecting hockey cards.
Yeah, same.
Basketball, not nearly as much, but I think it's. I'm sure it's bigger down in the States. I don't remember ever having an NFL card, ever as a kid.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever getting a package of NFL cards because there's just too many players in the league. You know, like, what are you going to get a left guard's player card? Who wants that? You know, here's a place kicker. Oh, great.
Did you take care of your cards?
Place kicker. No, I didn't.
Just like trash them? Because I still have some from when I was a kid. I don't know what they're doing. Like, they're just sitting in a box.
Anyone you think would be valuable
in I don't know. Like, I have some like pretty good hockey cards. I have some pretty good baseball cards. Like, I think I have like, I have some Jordan cards that I don't think those would hold value for sure. I don't know. They're probably not in good enough condition. But, like, can you imagine paying $4 million for a card?
No, I think that's crazy. But obviously, it's an investment. It's like buying paint, like a painting.
Or an NFT?
Like, yeah, NFT, though. You notice how that has kind of died down? Like, it was really hot for a bit. Now people, I think, are like, what the hell is this?
You just get it? Nothing, sort of?
Yeah, it's just like a little program. And it, you need, like, physically holding something, seeing something.
Yeah,
like it kind of feels like it's almost like it's a laundering maneuver. Like I know that that's what the rich do with painting. They're like, just dump it all into that. It's always going to hold its value. I'll flip it down the road and I'll just get the cash back. Like maybe that's what's going on with cards. And it has to be like who has $4.3 million just lying around? It's got to be someone that's loaded. But I would assume it's an intended investment, right? Like you're not just a Patrick Mahomes super fan. It's I'm going to pay this, and I think I can sell it for $5 million in 15 years. You know, how much more are you going to get, though? I don't know. Jack Armstrong will join us later in the hour on what he expects the Raptors to do tonight, what he would do with that fourth pick if it does go Cade Cunningham 1, Jalen Green 2, Evan Mobley 3. That's what it sounds like it's going to be in that order with Detroit, Houston, Cleveland, which would leave Jalen Suggs and then the rest of the board available for Masai and company, and these trades. You know, if Russell Westbrook ends up in L.A., what does he make of it? What happens with Bradley Beal? What happens with Damian Lillard? A lot to get into with Jack a little bit later on. We caught up with our buddy Jason Strudwick earlier this afternoon. I think Struddy's a happy man because Edmonton has been very active. Like Cody Ceci.
Very active.
Cody Ceci and Tyson Berry, multi-year deals.
It's crazy.
In Edmonton. People in Toronto's heads were exploding yesterday. Like, we saw that, and it didn't work.
Edmonton's like, nah,
no,
we're
going to
make it work.
It'll work here. And then Duncan Keith is there. There's been a lot of turnover on that blue line. And you bring in Hyman, you bring in Fogel, who I like.
Derek Ryan.
You get bring in Derek Ryan as an option up the middle of the ice. Like, I do think up front they are definitely a better team.
Look at their bottom two lines. Team. Like, we critique the Leaf bottom two lines. Look at theirs.
It's not a who's who. It's not a who's who. No, but still, Hyman's there, and he's not in Toronto. And, you know, they've kept Nugent Hopkins, and I think their four group is going to be okay. They're going to be great up top. I think during the regular season, they'll crush it. It's can they defend? That's always been the question. Can they defend? Their goaltending still scares me. That's Koskinen and Smith, for sure. But we caught up with Struddy earlier, and we began by asking Jason Strudwick of TSN Radio out in Edmonton, longtime NHLer, true friend of the show, if he is now officially the biggest Zach Hyman super fan.
The only way it could have been better is if it would have been Mitchell Marner and Justin Bieber would have come here to Edmonton. No, you know what, Zach Hyman, he's a type of player that I really appreciate him. You know, and you know, you think back to some of those games last year when they got to see each other so much, the Leafs and the Oilers. You know, those confrontations, Hyman and Mike Smith. You know, Mike Smith is a big, scary-looking guy. He's got the Undertaker hair, and he's, you know, whatever, 6'5". He's scary. But Zach Hyman went to the net all the time. And that's an element of the game the Oilers are missing. You know, getting to the blue paint, getting in on the forecheck. And you know, Hyman has, obviously, he can play with good players. He's played, you know, with every good player there in Toronto, up and down the lineup. So it's a really nice add for the Edmonton Oilers and something they really needed in that top six.
How do you think Connor McDavid woke up today feeling about this?
Well, I think he's excited, right? Like, with all due respect to the wingers he's been playing with outside of Nugent Hopkins, a lot of them were, maybe asked to do a little bit too much. You know, Dominic Cahoon. You know, I don't think anyone believes he's a top line left winger. But he was playing there because maybe the Oilers' lack of another option. So now all of a sudden you're going to, I'm guessing Hyman starts with McDavid and Puljujarvi, two guys on the wings that work hard. You know, they're going to get to the blue paint, can make plays. I think Puljujarvi will continue to improve. You know, Hyman probably is where he's at, which is, just fine. But it's a nice thing for him. And then, if they want to change the lookup, they can maybe throw Nuge up there and put Hyman down with Draisaitl, depending if they want to have a little more size with Draisaitl. So There's lots of options, and even if you really want to, you can throw Nugent Hopkins as a third line center. Bump up Fogel, maybe Dylan Holloway comes in at some time. So, you know, that's what you have when you have real depth. You know, guys that are actual players, you can mix and match a little bit. And I think Dave Tippett is probably as happy, maybe happier than Connor McDavid.
Well, it's going to be interesting how committed they are to these guys, where Nugent Hopkins gets a long-term deal, Hyman gets one. We know McDavid and Draisaitl are locked in for an extended period of time. Those four guys up front have term. And, you know, McDavid's making 12.5, but everyone else is, I think, somewhat reasonable. I mean, the Hyman deal, I think, is expensive for sure, but you got to pay to play. And then you look at the Leafs, which we talk about all the time. Their big four up front is making, I think, you know, $12 million more than the four that are now in Edmonton long term. And they're bringing the band back here, Strutty. I don't know what your vibe is like out there, and I know there's a lot of Leaf fans in Edmonton, and I know you follow this team closely, but it's a kind of jaded fan base right now in Toronto. It's pretty cynical. It's pretty dark here. I wouldn't say yesterday was overly celebrated with the moves that Dubas and company made. What do you make about where the Leafs are at today, maybe compared to where they were 2 or 3 months ago?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, as a fan, you're excited. You know, you can think back to some of the draft picks they had, and, you know, the excitement of getting, you know, Matthews and Marner and all these guys, the development of Morgan Rielly. And it's hard, though. Like, it's really hard. You know, what is that saying? They say, you know, that the difference between, you know, good and great isn't that much, but it's the longest journey to take. Mm-hmm. Like, and so, you know, getting to, you know, the top half of the league is relatively easy compared to maybe going from a 10th team to a 2 team or a 1 team. And it's a lot of work, and it's small improvements. But what happens right now, and you've seen it with across so many teams, is the cap. I mean, the cap makes it hard. So you need to have youth contributing. You need young, cheap players that are on entry-level deals come in and contribute in a big way. And, you know, you look around, some of the teams have had some success. They've had that. You know, you look at Montreal with the playoff run, it's Suzuki, entry-level contract, and he had a pretty big impact for them, right? So you've got to find that youth, and you can't sacrifice the youth. So, like, Maple Leafs fans, you know, I wonder if they don't feel they're a little bit kind of neither here nor there, because the team is good, but are they that good to take the next step to the upper echelon teams? We're talking about, you know, like looking like last year, some of those top teams. Can they make that step? I don't know if what they've done is enough. But, you know, if your hands are tied to cap, where do you go without maybe start trading players?
Yeah, that's not something that, as of now, publicly they're willing to admit they even want to do or entertain. I mean, I would think you have to be listening and willing to entertain anything, but it's got to be a blockbuster. It's got to be something massive coming in return. So I'm certainly not holding my breath. I'm assuming they're going to come back with, you know, a similar core and take another run at it. And that's essentially been it. And they're going to work around the edges, which is what they've been doing. I think they're still going to make a couple more moves. But yesterday was wild. There was a lot going on in the NHL. And a lot of money being spent. A lot of defensemen getting cash. Like Seth Jones gets $9.5 million. Dougie Hamilton gets $9 million. What do you make of the defensemen kind of taking over the offseason so far? Owen Power going first overall in the draft. And feels like the big D are finally getting their due at this point.
Well, it's long overdue, my friend. Long overdue. I love it. I love seeing it. We talk about everyone, oh, we got to score goals. And I do understand that you've got to score goals to win. But you have to be able to defend. And you look at what Montreal did with those 4D. And the abuse some of those guys gave out, those D-men like Weber and Sherratt and, you know, Edmondson and Peachy, they weren't fun to play against. So, you know, everyone's copycatting. I know that's how kind of the league breaks down at times. But, you know, I love seeing these big D-men get rewarded. And they take up space, and it's harder to get to the net. You know, the little D-man just doesn't take up the same amount of space. And it's just the length of the arm, the length of the stick. Yeah, they can be really agile, but they're not quite as strong. So I'm really, I'm like I said, I'm tongue-in-cheek, but I'm really excited and happy for these guys that they're now where they're at.
Jason, what's like your favorite non-Hyman signing of yesterday?
Michael Bunting.
the next Hyman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, you know what? In all honesty, I really like Phil Deneau in L.A. Yeah. And, you know, they have some young players coming. You know, Quinton Byfield, and you've got, who's a Turcotte, another young center there. But what I really like about it is that, you know, between Kopitar and Deneau, they insulate those guys. I mean, how many times have we seen top teams or teams that are struggling get those top picks, and then it's like, hey, guys, just go figure it out. Just go play against the top two players in the league, and it's hard. So now if you're a Quinton Byfield or if you're a Turcotte, you know, you've got insulation. And you're gonna slowly bring him along. Like, we'll give him, you know, let's have Byfield have a shift against McDavid. Okay, so that's pretty hard. So let's put him back against whoever's going to be Derek Ryan if they play the Oilers, right? So you insulate him a little bit, and they grow at their own pace. And I think they'll give Rob Blake and that staff a lot of credit for identifying that. And you know, Phil Deneau is not going to get you a lot of points. But, you know, putting in that situation, those younger players can watch them. They feel comfortable. Makes the wingers all that much better. So I really like that move. You know, you talk term, you know, Blake Coleman is a big deal and all that. The money is getting thrown
the
around.
Money's but, crazy you know, every year. Every yeah, year, Strelia. It never stops.
It is. But I you know, and we can merit, you know, debate the merits of whether he should have got that much deal or not. But I really like that for if I'm a young player and what I get to see and how I'm feeling around those guys, because I know that I don't have to do the hard stuff every night, even though I think I can. You know, I probably show no, I shouldn't do it right away in my first year or first couple of years.
Do you know what will be the most depressing presser maybe in league history is if Jack Eichel is still in Buffalo for the first day of camp. And I kind of want to see it happen just to see how he's going to react, because everyone else is leaving. They're committed to being terrible. Him and Phil Kessel in Arizona. Phil will be hilarious day one of camp, because Arizona is trying to be the worst team maybe in the history of hockey. And Phil's just going to mosey on in there and play 82 and score 25 and work on his handicap. But those would be great day one pressers. And I want to see them.
You know what, you're right, and it's hard because it's clear what they're doing. Arizona is just gonna, you know, just pick up bad contracts, pick up you know, picks and players to try to rebuild. And I mean, they were left with a pretty bad situation. Armstrong was, but you know, the guy I feel really bad for of both those teams, Buffalo and Arizona, is Jacob Chychrun. You know, I think he's a really underappreciated D-man. Yeah. And again, I come back to the D-man again. But, you know, I think he's a really good D-man. He signed there. He committed to that team. And now you're looking around, and he's going to get to play a ton. Like, he is going to, you know, he's like Roberto Luongo when he started out with Florida, getting, a, you know, 1,000 shots a night because they can't put noodles in, right? Because they know they don't want to lose. So, you know, they've got all these... This young guy, like, if you're Jacob Chychrun and I'm sitting right now wherever he hangs out, is this really where I want to be? Like, you know, how long is it till that team turns it around? I like their first pick this year, Dylan Gunther, really good player here from the Western League, and they'll have some other good ones. But is it 2, 3, 4 years? Like, how much pain do I have to take during this? And losing it's not fun. I've been on losing teams. But to be honest, I wasn't Jacob Chychrun. I wasn't, you know, expected to be a top player, and he is. And you're just going every night. Like, I think that's when people really, a guy's really looking over. Phil Kessel's got his cups, he's got his money. Jacob Chychrun, what is he? I mean, he's got money, but he wants to win too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's someone that we should really keep an eye on. And wonder how his attitude evolves with this whole thing. Not suggesting he has a bad one, but I mean, good God, man, give the kid a chance.
It's a battle for sure. Yeah, no, that's a good point, Strutty. Well, we'll see what happens, man. The dust is still settling throughout the NHL. There's still some guys out there, some decent names as well available via trade or free agency. So there'll be a lot more activity, and enjoy the rest of the summer. We'll do it again soon. We always appreciate you taking time for us.
See you guys. Go Argos.
Go Argos, says Jason Strudwick. The Elks. Are you ready for the Eskimo Elks existence? Are you ready for that, Jonas? Is that going to show up in any of your articles on theathletic.com? Or?
Man, I'm still trying to, like, get over free agency. That was something. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it was just a whirlwind. I know we talked a little bit about it earlier, but it's just like so many teams have changed in ways that I haven't even contemplated. Actually, that reminds me of something I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if the NHL ever gets to a point, like we were talking about Aaron Rodgers with Trey Wingo, if like NHL superstars want to be consulted on trades or on personnel? Can you imagine?
Well, I think it's come up in some areas in terms of like a coaching change. But I don't know if it ever got to that point where the GM and owners actually did that. But why, like, we had Burke on last year. We had Brian Burke on last hour.
Yeah.
Why would Sidney Crosby not be consulted on a coaching change?
For sure a coaching change.
Right?
But what about, like, personnel players? Like, imagine if Austin Matthews said to the front office, he's like, I'd really like it if Freddie stuck around.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I wouldn't. I'd almost be surprised if he didn't.
You think?
Well, why would you not try to canvas your players, your leaders, and find out, okay, what's going on in the room? How do we? Now, you have to evaluate based on his physical status, his play, but whether or not you think a guy is really important in the room or not, probably something worthy of asking. Doesn't mean you have to accept the advice or to adhere to the advice.
That's sticky, man. Like, you ask, and then you're like, yeah, we heard you. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't put yourself in that position, especially if you've already come up with the answer.
Yeah.
If you know you're moving on from Freddie, why go to Matthews and ask him a question? You know Matthews is going to say, I want him around. He likes him. He's his friend. You know.
Yeah.
He's not going to sewer the guy. I wouldn't expect that he would. Yeah, I just don't think it's possible with personnel decisions. And I think it's tough. You know, we talked about it with Rodgers, comparing it to the NBA. The NBA, the superstars say, go get me another superstar.
Yeah.
They don't say, you know, go and tinker with the bench or go and do this. It's just not conducive to that. The NFL, you can't have Aaron Rodgers saying, well, that guy's my friend, so I want him sticking around. It's like, look at his production. He can't play. He listed guys off yesterday, and a couple of big names. Randall Cobb, who is back. Randall Cobb has not performed for years in the NFL, but he's back because Aaron Rodgers is his buddy. Now, maybe he finds another spark. Maybe he brings something to the table. He had some great years there. Great years there. When they won that Super Bowl, it was him and Nelson. You know, those were the two options for the most part. But that's a long time ago. That's a decade ago. What's next? Jordy Nelson's coming back?
I was just thinking that, yeah.
You know? Like, well, Jordy Nelson can't play anymore.
And that's the dangerous thing. It's like, these guys may be great players. Like, we've seen it with LeBron sometimes, where they bring in a guy who's, like, from his past, like J.R. Smith a million times. And sometimes, like, those guys just aren't any good anymore. And
at some,
like,
point, it ends.
They know.
Yep. That's right. At some point, it just comes to an end. Donald Driver also being an option as the grappler.
Donald
Driver. Yes, of course, 10 years ago.
Who's the
Driver,
tight end?
Nelson. Who was the tight end in 2011 when they
won?
Yeah,
I was trying to think of who that was.
I don't think it was James Jones. I think he was there after that. I can't remember now. It might have been Jones. But anyway, we'll see what happens with NHL players seeking more power. I think it's coming in some capacity.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know exactly what that's going to look like.
Well, this Jack Eichel thing is like kind of the start of that creeping in. Maybe.
Yeah, but
maybe
Buffalo's
that's not fair.
So bad.
Yeah, like, I don't blame him.
They're such a mess.
We've never seen this before, really.
Yeah.
Have we?
Not on this level. Maybe not. Yeah, we've seen players like demand out or want out. Like, he hasn't even publicly said he wants out. Like, he hasn't blasted the team.
I mean, that press conference at the end of the year, he said everything but that, didn't he?
Close to it. He wants out. Like, everyone knows he wants out, but it hasn't been as blunt, you know, as even as Rodgers, where Rodgers was somewhat passive-aggressive, but never said he definitely wants to come back. Jack Armstrong coming up on the idea of Russell Westbrook going to the L.A. Lakers. What should the Raptors do with the fourth pick tonight? That and more coming up with Jack. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, the Jays back in action tonight at Fenway before they fly home. They're going to be in the country tonight, unless it goes extra innings. Even then, I guess it's, what, an hour and a half from Boston to Toronto? Probably not actually until after midnight. But as of tomorrow, they'll be here, and they'll be scattering. Like, there's no time off. You'd think they'd – obviously, you got to come back whenever you can come back. Like, clearly, that's the plan. When can you get back? This is when the government gave them the go-ahead. Probably would have been ideal to have a day off, but you got to get home, get settled, and now you're playing tomorrow night. Like, you're playing at the Dome tomorrow night. 15,000 people in attendance, so that'll be exciting, and we'll see what they get out of Fenway tonight. They've dropped 2 of 3. Got to get a split just to stay in the wild card race. You know, we said this before the series started. It's not about chasing Boston. That's not going to happen. but you got to stay in the race. And the Yankees are active. They picked up Joey Gallo last night. It looks as if they've maybe acquired Anthony Rizzo today.
I don't get that.
They're just,
they just
power,
want a million.
Power, 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 power. That's it. That's the only thing that matters. The NBA draft is going on tonight, and I feel like it's going to be overshadowed by the NBA trade market, which is already starting to really get cooking here. And here's our TSN Raptors and NBA analyst, Jack Armstrong. Do you get the same sense, Jack, that Cade Cunningham going first overall may not lead SportsCenter if Russell Westbrook ends up in L.A.?
I would agree with that, yeah. And I feel bad for those kids. You know, it's kind of like the NFL draft when Aaron Rodgers started all his drama.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it took away from a huge moment for these kids. And but, hey, it's all part of it. And obviously the free agent period starts next Monday. And then, you know, so teams are trying to position themselves for the start of business for the next, you know, next year. So this is the night usually where it happens, where you have to kind of start lining up your salary cap and figuring out and what exactly you want to utilize in terms of shipping off a draft pick on a night like tonight, or, you know, attaching it to a deal. So, yeah, it'll be fascinating tonight if Westbrook actually gets traded. I mean, everyone's saying, well, it's breaking news. Well, it's not news. He hasn't been traded yet. When he is traded, it's news. But it's almost like anytime Woj breaks something, it's fact. So I hope it is, and I think it'll be interesting for both teams. Obviously, Westbrook going to the Lakers, they get another impact player who's a L.A. native. To me, I mean, he'll add a lot of spice and intensity to their team. And on the other side, I think for Washington, it's a necessary move to get three good players as well as a pick, because they need to start to reboot their organization.
Yeah, this will be the definition of a big three. If Westbrook ends up in L.A. with LeBron and Anthony Davis, it's a weird mix, though, isn't it? Like, the way Russ plays and the way he's going to want to get his shots in, how's that going to work with LeBron and Anthony Davis?
No, I mean, he plays in a very frantic, out-of-control style. But, I mean, in defense of him, though, the thing I love about him is he lays it all out there and he competes and he plays to win all the time. And he's more than willing to live with the consequences of how he plays. I do think playing with LeBron, who is such an alpha, and having such a great player like Anthony Davis, I do feel pretty comfortable that he'll know his role and be respectful of that. And this is probably the best opportunity at this stage of his career to ever win a title. So to me, I think he'll do all right. I do worry a little about their spacing. You know, he's far from a great shooter. So I think the Lakers are still going to have to improve themselves in terms of perimeter shooting, because there could be some spacing issues.
Jack, speaking of spacing and speaking of trades, Brian and I were talking about Ben Simmons. We kind of disagree a little bit. I'm willing to bet that you can maybe convince him to shoot, and I would be willing to pay a price for that. Where do you stand on, like, his potential as a, I don't know, franchise player?
I look at him more, quite frankly, as a point forward than I do a point guard. I think teams trying to make him a point guard just doesn't fit. I think the most important skill for him, in my opinion, is him making free throws. I think if he makes free throws, I think it'll open his entire game up, because he won't be reluctant anymore. He will do everything possible to punish the defense, to get fouled, to score points. And I think that creates confidence. So to me, I think it's about fixing his shot. The question is, does he have the work ethic to do it? There's been a lot of questions in Philadelphia about, you know, you get guys, think about it. He and Joel Embiid broke in where they were tanking. And in my opinion, bad habits, a low standard was set. And now, you know, little by little, you've tried to ramp that up. And those guys have come up each time a little bit short. I mean, I think you would blame Simmons a whole lot more than Embiid at this stage. But there's been a lot of issues with Embiid, too, with his fitness and his commitment and conditioning, that I think he's matured a lot. But I think, you know, a lot comes down to an organization, and I know obviously Toronto gets tied to that, you know, the intrigue of, you know, you got to have a really, really good coaching staff that's going to do an outstanding job being patient and developing him and challenging him, and you got to have a culture in place, maybe unlike what Philly had. He might need just to change his scenery, but clearly – he's on the spot, and if he stays in Philadelphia, if it doesn't work out, it's a horrible play. It's a horrible, horrible city to play in when things aren't going your way. And maybe this is the best time for him to move on. But again, when I look at him, I look at him more as a guy that is so skilled and so talented, but he is, in my opinion, at the way he plays, he's not really a point guard. He's a kind of a guy without a position.
Like Giannis. With,
yeah, yeah. And look, Giannis, you know, Giannis normally doesn't make free throws. Giannis isn't a great three-point shooter. But, you know, I think they've surrounded him with enough that they can get by with some of his flaws. I mean, you know, Giannis is not a perfect player, by far from it. They won the title because, you know, in the big game, he made free throws. And who's to say that Ben Simmons can't develop into that? So, again, you know, but you got to coach the guy up. You got to demand more of him. And, again, I don't know what took place in Philadelphia, but clearly, whether it be Brett Brown's staff, Doc Rivers' staff, they have not done enough in terms of developing him into the player that he should be. Now, I'm sure a lot of that is on Ben Simmons and the people around him and whatever gets in his ear. But part of that's on the coaching staff as well and the climate of the organization in terms of accountability. And to me, the question is he willing now after this experience to grow up and say, I'm a professional athlete. This is unacceptable. I need to cross that line and be better.
Chatting with Jack Armstrong, a Raptors and NBA analyst ahead of the draft tonight. Reports out there would indicate that Cunningham's going one to Detroit, Jalen Green will go two to Houston, and Mobley will go three to Cleveland. If it plays out that way, is it a foregone conclusion the Raptors should take Jalen Suggs at four?
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. Me, personally, I'm a big fan of Jalen Suggs, so I'm comfortable with him. I would have no problem with the Raptors taking him four. You know, there's a lot of moving parts there as well because Kyle Lowry's a free agent. They drafted a point guard a year ago, late in the first round, in Malachi Flynn. They gave a significant contract, well-earned, well-deserved, to Fred VanVleet. So, but again, you got to be true to your board and take the best available guy on the board. So if, in fact, he's there, there'd be a lot to debate of why you wouldn't take him. You know, obviously, Jonathan Kuminga would be a name. Scotty Barnes is a name. Maybe you trade back. You know, but I think for the Raptors, to me, the three elements of these next 8 days that are going to be front and center for them from a player perspective are obviously tonight's fourth pick, the status of Kyle Lowry, and even to a lesser extent, but potentially a big extent, where Pascal Siakam sits.
Hmm. Well, Jack, if you were to play devil's advocate, what would be the argument to not take Suggs?
Because I maybe you think that you're going to keep Kyle Lowry and you want to upgrade in another area. Maybe you feel like you're pretty comfortable with Malachi Flynn already with Fred VanVleet, even if Lowry leaves, and you feel you need to improve at the wing position. You know, right now, a lot of the guys that are in the range of where the Raptors are, if it plays to Cunningham, Green, and Mobley going one through three, are wing players. Now you have OG Anunoby. You got to make a decision. Obviously, he's a restricted free agent on Gary Trent Jr. You know, where does he fit? You know, he's a talented guy. There were times, though, he came off as being a little one-dimensional in terms of his play. a little, you know, kind of similar to Norm Powell, kind of a high gun type player. So, you know, that's something you got to look at as well. But I'd be surprised if they didn't go with a Suggs.
Yeah, it feels like that's what everyone's waiting for, right? Like the mock draft echo chamber has said these four guys are going and that's it. And it's almost like they'd have to explain themselves and people would be disappointed. How dare you not take the guy we're supposed to take?
But I think the good thing is I'm confident in Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster, and their front office that they have no problem explaining that. They have the courage of their convictions. They're good basketball men. They've done a really good job in Toronto overall. And I don't think there'd be any hesitancy whatsoever on their part worrying about that. I think they're going to go with what they think is the right thing. I'm sure they have their board built. They know exactly how they want things to play out. They've gone through all the hypotheticals and all the different plans that would take place. So to me, I'm not the least bit concerned about that. I just think they're going to be true to their process of what they've done. And if Suggs isn't picked, they'll have no problem answering why, and they'll be all in on whoever they pick. And again, who's to say they don't trade back? Who's to say they don't package that pick?
Well, that's always a possibility. Absolutely. I mean, there's so much going on in the NBA, and that I think seems like a reasonable option for the Raptors if they have their eye on someone deeper down the board that they know they can get. Let's say you move back to, you know, whatever it is, 8, 9, 10, someone wants to go up. Okay, you got to pay a premium to move up to 4. And this is where it can really benefit you, the leverage of the big four being at the board, you know, being there for you. If it's Suggs has a ton of value. You know, there are probably some drafts in which Jalen Suggs might go first overall. So you're not going to get first overall prices for that trade, but I would think a fourth overall pick that's up for grabs would probably cost a fair amount, and I think Masai and Company could put some pretty good value on that, Jack, especially if they have their eye on someone further down the board.
And, guys, you know this. It was a big step going from 7-4.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That was a real positive move for them. So it puts them in a little bit better light. And, again, I think if you look at how the season finished a year ago, I think we all know that if the Raptors are healthy last year, even though they're playing in Tampa and there's no home court advantage, yada, 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 they're still a playoff team. I think probably a fourth or fifth seed in the East. And you look at how things play out. In my opinion, do you want to play a Raptors team with Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Nick Nurse as a coach? I think they could have won a round. Maybe they get past the second round.
Mm-hmm.
But the question, if you're Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, is are you playing for keeps or are you just kind of in it to be around it? And I think the actions speak louder than words. I think how they conducted business in April and early May said a lot to me. About the fact that, hey, they're not messing around trying to be around the edges and be the 7th, 8th seed, play-ins, games, all that nonsense. They want to be a top 4 seed. They want to be fighting for the Eastern Conference title, and they want to play for an NBA title again. And tonight I'm curious to see kind of how that process begins again.
I think you're right, Jack. Tonight very well might tell us a lot about how they plan on building in the future and what they believe their expectations are going to be year over year.
I will say this. I think by next Friday, in 8 days, we're going to have a much better idea of kind of what direction they want to take this. Now, as you guys know, it's two to tango, and it might take a lot more than two to tango because, again, if you're looking at not a Lowry, a Siakam, maybe you have another player on your current roster you want to move. There could be a number of teams involved. But I think that by the end of next week, we'll have a clearer picture. This is just one piece of the puzzle tonight. But it's a significant one because it's such a high pick.
It's going to be a fun one tonight. I hope they stay at 4. I'd love to see a guy like Suggs come up here, but I'm with you, Masai and Bobby Webster. Whatever they do, I think they'll be able to explain it. They'll sell it, and if it pays off in the end, it's all good. That's all that matters. if you're a Raptor fan at this point. So it'll be a fun one tonight. Enjoy the draft, Jack. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Thanks, fellas. Have a great night.
You too. There he is, Jack Armstrong, our NBA and Raptors analyst. The NBA draft tonight.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I love the draft.
Yeah,
man.
It's so fun.
It's so much fun. I think the NFL draft is the best one going, like, by a mile.
This year's one was really good because there was so much intrigue with the quarterbacks.
Right. Even though you knew Lawrence was going one, most people knew Wilson was going two. No one knew what the Niners were doing at three, though.
Yeah. Like, and then Mac Jones falling to 15?
15 to the Patriots, yeah. It was Justin Fields, the Bears move up to get him. It was awesome. Like this year, it was a great, great draft. But the NBA draft is great. The NHL draft, baseball's draft doesn't.
They're trying.
And they're doing their best.
I watched a little this year.
Yeah, the first round is fun. Like, you can't. It's tough to be into a draft that's into the, you know, 38th round. You're not following that kind of stuff. But if you have a team that is in the top 10, like when the Jays picked fifth last year and got Austin Martin, that was great. Like, that was a fun drafting experience. So it's getting better, but it's clearly at the back of the pack. So the Jays are back in action tonight, and we'll tee that up. The Yankees are making moves, man. It looks like Anthony Rizzo is on his way from the Chicago Cubs to the New York Yankees.
Can you have, like, nine DHs or no?
Well, I guess he can play first. He's a left-handed bat. That's what they're looking for. Like, they clearly felt like they were too right-handed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
but where
heavy.
Do you stuff all these guys?
Well, they're not all going to play. I mean, Gallo's going to play. Rizzo, I guess, will be a situational lefty. Like, he's not going to play every day.
Really?
But they all feel right. Like they have room for him. I don't know. Does he step in and play first every single day? I'm not sure. I mean, I guess we'll find out. But he'll be up in Toronto at some point, too, because the Jays are coming home as of tomorrow night. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. The Yankees are making moves. Anthony Rizzo has been traded from the Cubs to New York. Joey Gallo came up from the Rangers last night. He's on his way to New York. So that's a couple of left-handed bats. It sounds as if the Yankees are in pursuit of some bullpen arms, and they want to make a run at the wild card because they're in the same spot effectively as the Jays are. They're likely not catching Boston. Not gonna jump Boston and Tampa. Like, you're not going to catch both of them. So they're going for a wild card spot. We'll see what the Yankees or what the Jays do to counter. Seattle, who's ahead of both of them, they look like they might be selling. But the Cubs, this is the end of the road for the Cubs, right? Like this, and we've known this for a while. When they lost, what was it, 12 in a row? 11 or 12 in a row, that was it. That was the end of the road. But I guess there's video circulating of Chris Bryant kind of just sitting around the dugout and taking it all in, and that's probably the next domino to fall.
Man, time flies, eh? Like, they went in, what was it, 17? And now, 4 years later, it's just done? It was 17,
they won
right?
In 16. 16. 17 was Houston.
Oh, right.
And
so 5 years later, and it's just over, and they...
Yep. That was it, man. That's so quick. Like, 5 years ago. Remember that story? The Cubs finally doing it, how cool that was?
Well, the thought was, like, this team is built to be great for a while.
For a long time, the expectation was... Yeah, with Rizzo and Bryant, and, you know, they had a loaded staff, Lester. And,
yeah.
They were a great team. And obviously it's not going to happen. So end of an era there in Chicago for sure. We'll see what else they end up doing. We'll see what the Jays do tonight at Fenway, and we'll see what happens when they arrive at home later tonight or early into the morning as they're back at the Dome tomorrow night. So that's going to be a fun one tomorrow. Great seeing you, Jonas.
Likewise.
As always.
Enjoy the draft.
Yes, the NBA draft tonight. I cannot wait to see how it plays out. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the draft tonight. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.